Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about 28 Days Later, released in 2002.
Early aughts. Some of my students say because they don't know how to pronounce years that have two zeros in the middle.
Yeah.
Because that time does not exist for them.
They're like, this is before I was even alive. What even is time?
They're like, 22, 20, 02. I'm like, God damn you people. Why are you so young?
So this just came out a while ago. I'm excited to talk about it, and apparently it's impossible to watch.
Yes,
I apologize. I didn't know that. I didn't know that when I chose it.
Yeah, it was quite a journey. But before we get on that journey, Meredith, what is new with you?
Okay, so for a long, long time, like years, I was only listening.
The beginning of Star Wars.
Yeah, for a long, long time ago,
in a galaxy
I was
far
only
away.
Listening to podcasts. Only, and then not really reading books except for once in a while. And so I've been following, I looked up her name earlier so I could like be like, oh, this is who I've been following.
I'm just going to spit this information because I know it, but I forgot it. I have to look it up again.
I just found it. Sydney Books on Instagram.
Do you think that's her real name?
I don't know. Sydney with S-Y-D-N-E-Y-Y-Y Books. And I think she does recommendations for all kinds of genres, but I could be mistaken. But then in like spooky season, it's a lot of weird, creepy books. So I listen to the audiobooks a lot when I'm like doing chores and all that boring stuff that I hate. But I listened to one. It's called We Used to Live Here. And
oh, and that's been made into a movie, too, I think.
I don't know if there was a movie.
Yeah.
But it's just a woman and her wife, they bought a property to kind of flip. And they're in it's the very, very beginning of the stages of them flipping the property. And a family shows up on the doorstep one afternoon, late afternoon. And they're like, the husband's like, I used to live here. And we're just driving cross country on a move to Portland. And I'd really, you know, could we come in for a few minutes just to look around and I could show them where I grew up. And, the woman, her name is Eve. And I think it's Eve or Evie, but she's like, she really doesn't want to.
Yeah.
But she's like, yeah, okay, fine.
Because that's what we do. We don't listen to our gut.
I know. So she lets them in and it's craziness that happens after that. Then I listened to another book called Episode 13, which is all done kind of in like found footage, transcripts, personal journals.
Oh, cool.
Way. So it's about a kind of like ghost hunters kind of show. And they go into a place that's like legitimately psycho, like crazy. And that's a crazy weird there's like vortexes and all sorts of weird stuff. So that was really fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of it was just like not super scary, but like just, you know, a little like, oh, this is interesting. And now I'm halfway and I'm actually reading this one, but it's called Incidents Around the House.
Okay.
And it's a haunted house story, but through the perspective of like a second grader, like a child.
Oh my God.
And so the first chapter is like, I want to say a paragraph or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, mom is tucking me in. She asked if I brushed my teeth. I'm probably not saying it exactly, but like she asked if I brushed my teeth, washed my face. I say yes. She tucks me in. I say goodnight. And then mommy leaves. And then and she turns off the light. And then other mommy comes out of the closet. And you're like, ah!
It's like Coraline.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she calls her other mommy.
Oh,
and it's terrifying. And she keeps asking, like, can I go into your heart? The ghost.
Oh, no.
I know. So I'm like, oh, my God. This is so good. So I looked at a few reviews of the book before I started. They're like, oh, my gosh, chilling. So really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm halfway through and it's pretty good so far. Yeah. I like it. But
I might actually borrow that from you or ask to borrow that from you when you're done.
I just checked it out from the library.
Oh, you library users.
I know. I'm cheap. I don't like buying.
I know.
I'm poor. I'm a teacher. I have to check it out. But it's fun. So far, I might redact that and be like, you know what?
No, it turned out very upset.
But I'm like a good portion halfway through. So it's fun right now for spooky season, which is, I call the end of September spooky season because I can't wait.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing.
Very cool.
Katie and I talked about trying not to talk about school.
Yeah.
For our what's new.
Yeah. And in this way, you're also acknowledging that we may have some listeners that actually read and not just watch movies.
That's true, too. And you know, and if you're not, if you're like busy, if you have to commute, you know, get an audiobook and, you know, it'll be, it's really fun. So, but I'm impressed with a lot of the authors that are coming out these days with like scary stuff. And if I see Stephen King saying, this scared the crap out 100%. Of me, then I'm like, I have to read this book. and I love that he's like, recommending movies and books and stuff. Yeah. So, and then on that note, there's also the season premiere today of the third season of From? Oh, shoot. I always get it confused. There's From and Them, and I always get those mixed up. Them was a Prime show,
yeah,
and From is a show where they're kind of in a weird in this town. I think I maybe told you about it. They're like in a, you drive and you get stuck in this town,
okay,
and people get stuck in it from all over the country, and they end up in this place, and it's like a rundown town. It was abandoned, but then there's people who were kind of happened upon it. And they kind of have to create like a little bit of a town to like survive
because
and live.
Because they can't get out.
Because they can't leave.
Wow.
And it's very like the dome, Under the Dome kind of a little
bit.
Okay,
yeah.
But at night, these creatures come out and they look like 1950s, Night of the Living Dead walking like vampire creatures. And they're like, can I just come in? Oh, hi. And then they like tear you apart.
Ew.
So it's like perfect time. So I'm excited to watch.
And what streaming platform is that one on?
I think it's on MGM or something. I got the AMC MGM little subscription on Prime because we watch like Interview with a Vampire and other stuff. So I'm excited. I think it's fun.
Yeah. You do live for this time of year.
I do live for it. I mean, and I'm always very excited to be. Victor's like, can we watch something late? I'm like, get out of here with that nonsense. Like,
come back in November.
Only something that gives you a stomach ache is something I want to watch. So what's new with you, Katie?
I don't read. I used to read. I do like reading. I just don't make time for it. However, I also don't only watch horror movies. And so something fun that Tom and I did last weekend, there was a 50th anniversary screening of Blazing Saddles in the theater.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's one of our favorites. Since the very beginning, like we both watched it as kids.
I'll sometimes if someone's like in the house, like super gassy, and I'm like, what more beans?
I think you guys have had enough. But anyway, so we go, and it was very cool because there was just a little bit of a 3-minute interview or kind of presentation by Leonard Maltin at the beginning about, you know, just kind of the historical significance and context of the movie, that it was so early in Mel Brooks's career. And then he released this and Young Frankenstein in the same year, which were obviously two like enormous successes.
I love Young Frankenstein. It's like one of my favorites.
Yeah. I was a little, it's funny, like going into it, when I saw that it was having this, you know, screening, immediately I was like, oh my God, yes, we have to go see that. And that was like, you know, a month ago or whatever. And then as it drew nearer, I was like, is it going to be weird to sit in a theater among strangers laughing at this stuff that is so categorically offensive, right? And like, I understand it's satire. And in theory, anybody else that was going to see the film would also understand that it was satire. But we also Tom and I had a shared experience of trying to show this movie to some friends of ours that did not have that context, didn't know anything about it going into it, and we put it on and we're laughing our asses off, and they're like, this is so offensive. Like, they were really kind of bothered by the fact that we found it comedic.
Right.
Because they did, you know, and that was another thing. Like, we, you know, shown the kids Mel Brooks movies over the years and determining, like, oh, are they old enough to watch this? Are we old enough to watch this? And with this one, I actually waited the longest for this one because I was like, in order for us to show them a movie that uses this kind of language and makes these kinds of jokes, they need to be old enough for me to explain to them in advance, like, this is why this is funny, because mm-hmm. it wouldn't actually be okay to say these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it's funny because, and have them be old enough to understand that. And even then, I think watching it made our kids uncomfortable just because they have, like, just a very, like, base kind of rejection of using those kinds of, like, racial slurs and stuff that are really prevalent in Blazing Saddles. And so I was like, when I realized, I'm like, oh, we're going to go, like, in public and watch this movie amongst other people. Like, how is that going to feel? Is that going to be weird? And it, at first, it was, like, that opening scene on the railroad where that's actually another great Blazing Saddle story Tom and I have, is that one time we had with this big bottle of tequila that had been, like, sitting around because we don't really drink tequila for a really long time. This is when we were, like, early 20s, mid-20s. And we were like, let's make a drinking game out of Blazing Saddle so we can use up this tequila. We're like, we'll do a shot. Because
we hate ourselves.
Yes, no, we said we would do a shot for every racial slur they used.
Oh my God.
And we realized,
dead.
Yeah, in the first 3 minutes of the film, we couldn't pour them fast enough, let alone take them fast enough. And so we're like, this was a bad idea. Yeah. So we abandoned it. But anyway, just that opening sequence, it's really jam packed with, like, racial slurs and offensive terms and all of that stuff. But once we got past that point, like, and kind of settled in, it was a really fun experience to see it in the theater. And it also, I shouldn't have been surprised, but it didn't occur to me there would be so many senior citizens there. Mm-hmm. Like, the theater was, like, 2/3 people, like, 70 and over.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're like, oh, yeah, because this is, like, you know, this is an old movie. It's from the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so, like, their adulthood, like, when they were my age, this was the movie, like, the hilarious movie that came out, like, Wayne's World might be for us. Mm-hmm. And so there was a family in the row behind us that I, you know, kind of noticed as we were walking to our seats, that it was like a whole fit, like, 3 generations.
Yeah.
You know, grandma, grandpa, parents, and kids that honestly, in my opinion, were too young to be seeing the movie.
Yeah.
And so we get to the scene where Madeline Kahn is performing I'm Tired. And the grandma in this family behind us starts laughing at the opening of the song and does not stop the entire performance. Like, this grandma
She's
is
like,
just...
I just love Madeline
Kahn. She was cackling her ass off through the entire duration of the song to where we were just laughing at her laughing.
Yeah.
Because she was just, like, it was gleeful.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what her story was, what her connection or anything to that song from when this movie came out, but it delighted her.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
She was a huge comedic loss when she passed away.
Yeah, absolutely. But
in Young Frankenstein, where he's, like, blowing her a kiss and she's like, ah! Like, it's like, because she doesn't want the kiss to touch her hair.
Yeah.
Even, like, those little slight little,
yeah.
Made me just, like, laugh because she's just, like, a delight and ridiculous and, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Hillary and I used to quote Young Frankenstein, like, ad nauseum when we were in middle school, and one of the ones would be like, taffeta, darling, taffeta, sweetheart. No, the dress, it's taffeta. It wrinkles so easily. Oh, the nails.
Oh, don't the hair. Don't
yeah.
And he's like,
They bump elbows. But yeah, so seeing that, it ended up being a really, really amazing experience to see that on the big screen and, you know, just really enjoy it with all those other people that were all equally delighted to be.
Yeah.
Like, everybody in that theater knew that movie by heart.
Well, I think it's fun when you have an experience like that, especially... That's why I liked going to, like, Rocky Horror when they had it.
Yeah.
Everyone knew all the lines mm-hmm. or any other kind of movie that it's like, older. And people have watched it probably so many times mm-hmm. on their VCRs back in the olden days. And then now DVDs. But that shared experience is always really fun.
Yeah,
so.
To have that, like, mm-hmm. very, very tangible connection with complete strangers.
Yeah.
And that unifying experience.
Yeah, so that sounds fun. I know that they're doing, I think they did Coraline, a re-release of that.
And yeah.
Charlotte went with her friends, I think. There's also another one they're doing, but we will be doing at my house
our annual
Rocky Horror, where we're like yelling and shouting at the screen. And it's always fun. And I have all the, I have to start collecting all the props and making and
come early to fill up the water guns.
Yeah. I'm like, here, Katie, fill up these water guns. We need about 35.
I'm like, no problem.
And then we didn't. Like, we never do. I'm like, oh, we actually need like 7, but.
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. So I did the recap this time. It's kind of long. So it came out in 2002, like I said, and it has Cillian Murphy. It was like one of his very first roles. Mm-hmm. And then it also has Brendan Gleeson.
Right.
And he's amazing. And anyone who may not be familiar with the actor, he's Mad Eye Moody, and he's in a bunch of other really amazing movies too.
He's in that miniseries Mr. Mercedes, based on that Stephen King trilogy.
Yeah, and he's a great actor. He's tremendous. So,
and then Naomi Harris. Like, at first when I'd seen 28 Days Later when I rewatched it for this, but not since it came out, so I had no recollection whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I saw Naomi Harris, and I'm like, why do I know her face? And she's the new Moneypenny from the Daniel Craig Bond movies.
Okay. I've never seen those.
Beautiful, wonderful British actress.
Yeah, I've never seen those, so I don't have any contacts for her in other roles, but okay, so the film opens with images of violence, protests, news footage being watched on a screen by a chimpanzee who's tied down and has wires connected to the chimpanzee's head.
Very Clockwork Orange.
Yes. It definitely has the vibe. On the security screen, it says, Cambridge, lab or something
Primate
like that.
Primate research, chimpanzee
facility.
Research.
Yeah. We see people coming in, and it seems to be animal rights activists who are against these chimps being used for tests. They look horrified as they walk in. There's, some that are right in the midst of probably being autopsied.
Yeah,
they're just, and there's a bunch of chimps.
Guts everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of monkeys or chimps, kind of all locked up. And they look horrified. They start taking photos. Then they want to start working on releasing the animal test subjects. And a scientist happens to come in and see them. And he's like, oh, because he basically has walked in on a break-in.
Right.
And he tells them, he's like, don't touch them. They're highly contagious. Mm-hmm. And they're like, contagious with what? And he says, they've been given an inhibitor, basically, to suppress.
And he said they're infected with rage.
Yes. And he says, they're like, what are you talking about? And he's like, they have rage. Mm-hmm. They're infected with rage. And they're like, what a load of crap.
Yeah.
They're like, what does that even mean?
You wouldn't take that seriously.
Yeah. So they're like, we're going to release these monkeys, and you're victims, basically. Mm-hmm. And you're just gonna have to get over it. And he's like, no, pleading with them. And some of the guys are holding him back, and a woman opens the one of the cages, and the chimp attacks a woman and bites her, and immediately she starts to get infected. Her eyes turn red, she starts vomiting blood, and she's like not herself anymore. Mm-hmm. She starts attacking another activist. She vomits on him. It's like blood, and he gets infected. It happens very, very fast, and it spreads quickly. And suddenly, chaos has ensued. And the screen then goes black, and a title card says 28 Days Later." So now we're in a hospital room, and we see a young Cillian Murphy wake up super naked.
I was wondering if that was why it's so hard to find DVDs of this film now. Like, if Cillian Murphy's trying to scrub them.
He's like, my penis shall not be seen by anybody.
Because it's there's his penis for a long period of time. And then it's like, here's his butt for a while. Oh, here's his penis again.
Yeah, he's super, super naked on a gurney all alone in a hospital. And he has stuff, wires attached to him. He's very, very skinny. And then he gets up and he's looking around, searching for anybody. Mm-hmm. The hospital is in shambles. There's, phones off the hook, stuff knocked over, and there's no one around. And it seems that people probably also got out there really very, very fast. There probably was an evacuation of some kind. The man, his character's name is Jim, and he calls out hello. And he looks for any signs of life. He grabs a few sodas. He's really weak. He chugs a soda because I imagine he hasn't eaten for some time.
Right.
The sequence that then kind of happens at this point is shows a completely empty and quiet London. And if we know London, it's mm-hmm. always so busy. There's tourists. There's knocked over, you know, kiosks and things. Mm-hmm. There's souvenirs. There's Big Ben, and not a soul in sight.
Yeah.
And there's like knocked over bus.
Well, that actually
stuff burned out.
I looked up when I was watching that part. I was like, this looks so convincing, like too convincing, really, to be CGI or green screen.
It was real. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I looked up, like, you know, how they were able to, and it was just like early morning and mm-hmm. closed streets. Like they just worked really hard to find mm-hmm. recognizable spots in London that they could manage to get footage with no other people there, because mm-hmm. like that scene where he's walking across the bridge with Big Ben in the background, like you're seeing a huge portion of street and city,
and there's
no one anywhere. It's mm-hmm. like that is remarkable that they were able to capture that.
I think they closed streets, and then they also had girls who are bustier ladies to kind of like do crowd control, be like, hey, everybody,
come this way,
come over here, we're gonna stay out of the shot, you know. And I was like, that worked. Danny Boyle's a genius. Who also
how
did
we manipulate people.
He, of course, also did, the director did Trainspotting.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already a very known director.
Mm-hmm.
So everything kind of looks gritty as well because of who he was or is still. He's. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make a mistake saying he passed. That's not true. So he's walking around. There's no one around. There's money he sees on the street. He has a bag. He puts some sodas in it. He picks up some of the money. He puts it in there. And finally, he sees a big, huge... there's a newsstand that says on the headline of a newspaper, evacuation, and as the headline. And then there's a big, huge, giant board that has notes, photos attached to it that are asking for help finding people mm-hmm. that have run away. Just, it's, people are like pleading for help. There's passports clipped onto different things, like onto the board. It just looks like people's last-ditch efforts to connect with family that have gone missing. So something very, very troubling has happened when he has been sleeping unconscious. Eventually, Jim enters a church and goes looking for anyone inside. He goes up to the balcony overlooking the church pews and finds people, or so he thinks. And they're all in the pews, all piled up on each other, kind of, or sitting, leaning against each other, sort of sleeping.
Mm.
And he asks, hello. And a few of them stand up and look at him, giving like a very, very... haunting, weird, frozen
almost like
look.
Animalistic, almost, too.
Mm-hmm. Finally, there is banging at the door right where Jim is, and it's a priest who enters and is very erratic, screeching, and he has red eyes. Jim is like, Father, Father, stay away, you know, no, no, and he's trying to reason with him, and he suddenly hits swings his bag that's full of sodas and it knocks him down. He's like, I'm so sorry.
He's a good Irish Catholic boy.
Yeah, he's like, Father, he doesn't want to, like, knock out a priest. And suddenly Jim's on the run as the people, in quotes, or infected, are running after him. And they run in very, very
really
fast.
Really fast, yeah.
And as he's running, two people emerge wearing masks. One is in a gas mask. Another one just like cloth fabric over her face. And they're running after him, and they're saying, you know, come with us, and they have Molotov cocktails, and they throw them at the infected. Jim asks, what the hell's going on? They're like, move, move, move.
We're not going to have this conversation right now.
Yeah, and they end up being able to, fight off the infected, and they blow them up. And they end up in their newsstand hideout. They ask him, a man named Mark, and Selena is there too. They ask, who is he? And Jim explains he was a bike courier and he was hit. Mm-hmm. And then he woke up. So Lena and Mark are like, well, we have some bad news to tell you. And they say it started as whatever this is, started as riots, but it was something more, Selena says, because it was happening in small towns and villages.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly blockades were overrun by infected. Jim is like, what about the government? And they say, there is no government. And he's like, that's not possible. There has to be a government. Mark and Selena say, you know, our families are dead and yours will be too. And he's like, I can't believe that. So he tries to get up and leave and see if his parents are dead. And they say, you don't go anywhere at night unless you absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. And you don't go anywhere alone. And we'll have to go tomorrow when it's daylight, because you won't be coming back if you try to go alone right now. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, they make their way over to Jim's house and find that his parents took their own lives. They leave a note on the back of his childhood photo saying, they're like, we left you asleep. You know, now we're sleeping too. Please don't wake up. Love, Mom and Dad. And it's just like heartbreaking. They decide to sleep all in Jim's house. Jim is in grief. And Selena says, you know, at least they died peacefully and he should be grateful. And he's like, what are you talking about? And Mark then describes his own experience of how he and his dad and his sisters, and I think his mom too, but I don't actually remember all the parts of the story.
I feel like I remember him mentioning his mom. I just remember his dad and sisters being part of the story.
Right. He mentions that they went to the station hoping they could find their way onto a plane, anything. He said his dad had all his hands full of cash, and he's like, but everyone was trying to do that too. He's holding his sister's hands, and he's trying to hold on to them, but he lost his grip, and then he just climbed onto a kiosk, and the ground was soft, and he was standing on people. Mm-hmm. And he said you couldn't figure out who was infected and who wasn't. It was just a mass of people. Mm-hmm. And then he was on the top of a kiosk, and he saw nobody else in his family except for his dad's face, and they're just making eye contact, and it was during this absolutely horrible event, and that's the last time he saw his father. And he says, you're lucky that they died peacefully and on their own terms. So Jim doesn't say anything after that.
He's like, okay. Gotcha.
But Selena said they don't have time to go back to their hideout, and they decide to all stay in the living room at Jim's house. Jim is remembering his family. He lights a little candle and he's thinking about his parents and he's reminiscing, just probably maybe a time shortly before he's, you know, got into an accident and his interaction with his mother after she bought some groceries. Suddenly two infected people jump into the windows and start attacking him. And Selena asks him, you know, they're like, fight, fight, fight. And suddenly, the two infected are killed. And Selena asks if he was bitten or blood got into his mouth. Mark was not so fortunate. He's like, wait. And Selena just kills him with a machete. And she wastes no time. Jim asks, she's like, we have to leave because they know we're here, and more will show up. So we have to get moving now. Jim asks Selena how she knew to kill Mark. He's like, there's blood everywhere. How did you know? And she tells him that she could just tell by the look in his eye that he knew he was infected.
Yeah.
Selena also tells him that she would kill him in a heartbeat and that staying alive is as good as it gets. And it's a waste of time to try and make plans for a future.
Yeah. She's like crazy, like tough and abrasive and like short, like from the very introduction of her character. Mm-hmm. Like
she's a Michonne clearly from Walking Dead, essentially. Just like a badass. He's like, who gives, fuck you.
Yeah. But and she's also like, you look at it as like, well, she's probably, that's one of the reasons she's still alive is because that's her personality. But then also everything that she's experienced in order to stay alive would have made her more so that way.
Yeah, definitely. Any kind of connection, there's no, because she's like, what are your plans? Are we going to try to find a cure or fall in love and fuck? And he's like, and she's like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Basically. So he's like, oh, okay.
Great. Good talk.
He doesn't say anything. So they're walking and it's kind of dawn or dawn. Well, no, it's kind of middle of the night, I think, at this point. Jim notices some Christmas lights up in an apartment, and then they start over to the apartment and they have to start climbing. There's shopping trolley carts as a barrier at the bottom of the stairs, and they climb up, and they have, of course, the power is out, so they have to climb up all of these flights of stairs to get up there. They have to take a break because Jim is still recovering from just being in a coma and having like no fat on him, and suddenly they're being chased by the infected and they're running for their lives, and Jim's like, wait.
So she's sad. Like, fuck you, I'm not waiting.
She's like running. Then they're met at the top by a guy in riot gear, and he kills the infected handily. Selena and Jim now meet Frank, who's played by Brendan Gleeson, and his daughter Hannah, who's a teenage girl, not an adult, or and not like a little kid. Mm-hmm. She's pretty capable as well. Frank is thrilled to have people there, and he gives everyone a drink, saying this is a cause for celebration. This is the first, like, not infected people he's seen in a long, long time. Yeah. He gets the nice glasses and creme de menthe to do a little toast.
What?
Yeah. Jim attempts to clean himself up, and he shaves and cuts himself up. Frank offers them a place to sleep. Selena mentions that Frank and Hannah are desperate, and they probably need them more than Selena and Jim need them. Jim thinks that they're good people, and Selena asks them to think about if they're going to actually slow him down.
Yeah.
She's like, they're good people, you know, but you have to think about your survival, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's like, if they slow me down, I will leave. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that. Jim says, you think I don't understand, but I do understand what's at stake. And thank you for saving my life. And Selena says, sure. And good night. Mm-hmm. She like leaves the room.
She's super good at connecting with people, right, and accepting gratitude and compliments.
She's like, the following morning, Frank gives them a tour of the apartment, and they're running out of water because it hasn't rained in 10 days. He's like, I never thought we'd have this problem, especially in England.
In London, yeah.
He plays a radio message from the military saying the answer to infection is here. There are survivors and we can protect you. And the message has their location right outside of Manchester. Frank wants to leave and he needs their help because if something happens to him, Hannah would be all alone and he can't have that. Selena doesn't want to go, but Frank concedes that they have to do something. They need to do something, you know, more than what they're doing.
Yeah,
and
they can't just sit there.
Yeah, Hannah interjects. She said, they can die here in the apartment. They're going to want out of water. And she's like, the soldiers maybe could protect us instead mm-hmm. of us just waiting here to die. So they load up Frank's taxi. And at this point, Jim sees more devastation as they're driving through the city. They enter a tunnel, which is in the direct route to the other side of the river, which is a horrible idea. Jim's saying it the whole time. Frank attempts to drive over this huge blockade of other cars, and there was sort of a ramp that goes on top as they go up, and they kind of have a little bit of a laugh until they go down and they get a flat tire and like the worst possible spot you could get a tire, flat tire. Jim is saying that it was a horrible idea. And then Frank's like, okay, agree. So let's repair this and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Hannah is very capable, as I mentioned earlier, and she's helping change the flat. And rats start running from the affected, who are all running at them. And she's on the ground trying to fix the flat.
Yeah, because they couldn't get the jack going. So mm-hmm. the other three are holding the car in the air
They see the infected running and they're like, everyone, hold this car up. And they're all pulling it up as she's like getting all the, Hannah is getting all the nuts bolted
she's
back
like
on
a
there.
NASCAR pit crew.
Yeah, she's like, okay, 1, 2, 3, drop it, let's go. Then they jump in the cab and drive away in the nick of time. They also happen to get to an abandoned and very intact grocery store, mm-hmm. and they go have a nice shopping trip, and it's like the only upbeat part of the movie.
Yeah.
Frank goes over to Jim as he's like looking at some alcohol, and he's like, don't just get any crap. And he gets some nice bottles of scotch.
This is a little monologue about the booze.
Yeah. Reminds me of our engineer, my engineer. So then they have to get gas for a car, and luckily there's a tanker full of petrol, because mm-hmm. they need some petrol. Jim takes a walk to the gas station cafe to look around and has an encounter with, there's a lot of death, and there's an infected child who he has to kill. Mm-hmm. It definitely had a Danny Boyle vibe to it. Have you ever seen Trainspotting?
Yeah.
So that scene with the baby in Trainspotting definitely had that kind of vibe for me in this scene. Later, all the survivors have a nice picnic in the country. They see horses running around, and they just enjoy each other's company. Jim and Selena take a walk, and then they have a heart-to-heart. Selena laments about the end of the world and that she was wrong about surviving being as good as it gets. Selena gives Jim a kiss on the cheek, and they decide to camp out in the country. Hannah is worried because she's worrying about their safety and being out in the open, but Frank thinks that, you know, we're safe enough. There's no one around.
Yeah.
Selena is sleeping really fine, just like knocked out. And Jim wakes her up and she has her machete. She's like, ah, what? And he's like, how'd you get to sleep so easily? She's like, oh my God. And like hands him her pill of Valium or her bottle of Valium pills. So Frank allows, you know, Jim says takes a few and he lets Hannah take half of one because mm-hmm. he's like, she's still like a kid. So at this point, Jim has a terrible nightmare that he's all alone and he's calling for his friends and shouting for anyone. Frank comforts Jim while he's sleeping, and he's like, thanks, Dad. And aww, it's a very, like, touching moment.
Yeah.
The following morning, they set out again to get to the outpost that they heard about on the radio, and they see Manchester is just a burning relic of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to Manchester. It's just hopping. It's a very, very busy, busy, bustling city. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine being anywhere near it in this kind of world is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Finally, they get to the outpost, and it's abandoned. No one is there. And Frank, who was the hope and optimistic part of this group, starts to lose it a bit.
Yeah, he finally snaps.
Yeah, and Selena tells him they have to go, and he's like, go fucking where? Because he's like, just...
This was his last hope. He doesn't
know. This is his last ditch, you know, effort trying to protect his daughter. Tragically, Frank is infected at this point because a drop of blood from a corpse that a raven was picking at, or a crow or something, drops into his eye, and he yells at Hannah to get away. And he's like, I'm really sorry. I yelled, I love you so much. And she starts to approach him, and he's like, get away from me. And everyone's just kind of like stupefied that he was suddenly infected so easily and tragically. Jim is standing there frozen, and Selena's like, kill him, kill him. And he's like, oh my God. And suddenly Frank is gunned down as he's turning by soldiers who happened upon them. They load up the remaining survivors in their Jeep, and they're taken to a big estate where they have a ragtag group of soldiers. They have barbed wire blockades, and Major Henry West, played by Christopher Eccleston, who plays Doctor Who in a bunch of the seasons, I think.
He's also in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
Oh, okay.
That they're stealing all the cars for.
He does have a face where he's a big meanie.
Yeah.
He welcomes them in and tells them that they can take hot showers. And they're like, oh my God, we haven't had a hot shower in ages. The soldiers take the car and do donuts in the front of the house. And they just seem a little bit goofy, honestly. Yeah. Selena cries, and her hard exterior shell is cracked because of the death of Frank, and now Hannah having to cope. And he's like, she'll cope. And she's like, but she shouldn't have to.
She'll be okay. And it's like, okay is not good enough, right, basically.
Yeah, because they had each other, you know, and she thought that was just like lovely that they had each other even still through this horrible, horrible times.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jim kisses Selena, and the two of them kiss passionately for a moment until Selena storms off, and she's like, no, this is not the time for that.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. So then Major West talks to Jim and apologizes for being a disappointment, expecting more than a few of them. He shows Jim around, and Major West shows him the infected soldier that they have kept on a chain. He wants to know how long that they will live while infected and how long it will take them to starve to death,
right,
which is actually a pretty good idea.
Can you just wait it out?
Right. Then later at dinner, they talk, and one of the soldiers mentions that things will get back to normal. And the sergeant mentions that back to normal may be wiping people out, since mankind has only been on Earth a short while. And all the other guys are like, well, that's pretty, like, you know.
That's a real bummer.
Existential, whatever, like, this guy. I thought he was an interesting character, that one soldier. And as they're chatting, the infected start approaching the house, and they're killed pretty handily by the soldiers. And once they all come sauntering back inside, one of them notices Selena has her machete in her hand, and he's like, you won't be needing that, and starts kind of taunting her and being like really sexually aggressive towards her.
Yeah.
And the major is like, you need to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It's not anything good. Something isn't right, and Jim and Selena know it. So Jim tries to intervene and is tackled by one of the soldiers. Sergeant Farrell, the one who is talking about how, you know, mankind is the blip in the creation of Earth, knocks down one of his own fellow soldiers to get him off Jim, because he does not agree with what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
At this point, the cards are shown. Major West tells Jim that he promised his soldiers women because he found one of his soldiers with a gun in his mouth. And so he moved the nine of them, there's only nine of them, away from their blockade and made a radio message, and he promised them women. And at this point, Jim tries to leave, and Sergeant Farrell also tries to stop the soldiers from, like, stopping them from leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And because he doesn't like what they're doing, and Jim is offered a chance to go with it or not. And of course, Jim's like, he doesn't say anything. So he's like, Farrell, Major West is like, okay, kill him, basically.
Yeah.
Farrell and Jim are chained up, and at this point he tells Jim that the rest of the world is fine and that the UK is a diseased island that was just kind of left to die.
Mm.
they're taken outside the perimeter, and Farrell is killed after, but not after he just like gives them a what for, kind of telling them they're pieces of crap.
Yeah.
And so then because of their altercation, Jim manages to get away. And at this point, he has a choice. He can leave Selena and Hannah or go back for them. And he's looking at the sky and he sees an aircraft flying across the sky. So there's life somewhere.
Uh-huh.
He just doesn't know where. So meanwhile, at the house, the major asks Selena and Hannah to dress up in nice dresses. There's a struggle, and Selena kisses one of the soldiers right on the mouth, saying, you know, you need to leave the room because you're a gentleman, and then we can get dressed.
Mm-hmm.
So they agree, and they leave the room, and Selena gives Hannah some drugs to help her so she won't remember or care what these soldiers are about to do to them.
Yeah.
Which is awful and horrific.
Yeah, well, and it's like, it's not what I thought was she was gonna do. Like, I thought it was like she was getting the guys out of there so that like they would try and escape, or they would try and like find something to use as a weapon to defend themselves or whatever. And so it was like surprising and like a little disappointing that she got the soldiers out of there just so she could drug Hannah.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe she just realized it was a no-win situation. Suddenly, the wind-up alarm at the blockade right outside of Manchester is being set off, so the soldiers go to investigate. But Jim is there, and he's waiting to ambush one of the soldiers. The major finds one of his men dead in the front seat of their Jeep, and the Jeep will not start as he is trying to make it back to the house, so then he has to go on foot. Jim shows up at the house, and he sets the infected soldier free to kind of be a distraction of some kind while he can try to find Selena and Hannah. The two of them, though, are sitting in the living room in their very nice dresses while the soldiers wait for the Major West to return. Hannah is super high on pills.
So high.
And she tells the two guys that are with them, she's like, you know, they're probably dead. They're not coming back.
Yeah.
And they're like, shut up. And she's like, well, they're probably just dead anyway. So. Mm-hmm.
And Selena's like, be quiet. Like, stop it. And
Selena's
she's like,
stop.
I don't care.
And she's like, and you're probably going to be dead too.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly the soldiers get infected, and Jim looks for a way inside. And Selena and Hannah are escorted by two of the remaining soldiers, but Hannah runs away. And one of the soldiers gets away, and Jim kills him before he can... like, one of the soldiers gets away from the infected, and Jim kills him as he's trying to leave. And then there's, at this point, three infected soldiers, like, who are just running amok through the house.
Mm-hmm.
The major returns to find his stabbed soldier on the ground, and he, like, holds his hand as he passes. Hannah has a close call with one of the infected guys as she clings to the back of a mirror, and the infected is, like, staring in the in the mirror, and it's just absolutely nerve-wracking. Jim runs through the house, and one of the he runs into a room, and one of the soldiers is under the bed hiding, and he's like, I've got no bullets. And it's like a room for like little kids. There's like a rocking horse and stuff.
Yeah.
And so he like leaves the door open, and then the infected soldiers make their way in and kill the last remaining guy as Jim jumps out the window.
Yep.
Leaving him. He's like, suck it. And then leaves. Selena is being held against her will at this point by one remaining guy, like, who's doing some kind of weird last stand. Like, he can't let go of this idea that she's going to be his.
Yeah.
And Jim attacks him and savagely kills him, like, fingers in the eyes. It's a crescendo of this amazing soundtrack for this scene. And Selena has her machete, and as she's trying to muster up the courage to kill Jim, she makes eye contact with him, and she realizes he's not infected at all.
Yeah.
Like, she sees his, like, very blue eyes that are not red, and he's Jim. He's not infected.
Yeah.
The two of them, at this point, kiss, and Hannah hits Jim in the back of the head because she thought that he was biting her. He's like, oh, my God, are you freaking high? And they almost get away. And the major is in the car, and he shoots Jim, saying, you killed all my boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, Hannah is sick of this shit. She backs up the car, and the infected soldiers, there's like a bunch of them, they pull the Major West out of the back of the car. And then she pulls up to get Selena and Jim. And then they smash down the gate.
Mm-hmm.
They get out. There's a quick little flashing scenes of Selena resuscitating Jim. And suddenly it's 28 more days later. Selena and Jim are living in a cottage. They're making a message that says hello to the flying military overhead. And the three of them have each other now, and it seems to be okay that they are okay and surviving in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of 28 days later. Did you think this movie was scary?
No, I didn't. it was, I mean, people would describe it, I think, as a slow burn. I found it a little boring. Up until, I mean, obviously the closing sequence at the manor was very, very fast paced and very exciting and, eventful. But I wouldn't say that I loved it. Mm-hmm. The only part that I remember that resonated with me, like, oh, this is a scary movie, or oh, this is like horrific, is when he first encounters the infected in the church.
You know,
because like when he first walks in and there are all those people there, I thought, and I still kind of think that like most of them were corpses. Were they all supposed to just be sleeping infected?
I imagine it was a bunch of them that were just kind of like a hive of some kind, they all just go inside. Because
My perception was, because you see this in like all kinds of dystopian end of days type movies where like when stuff like, if events like that were to actually happen, the number of people that would go seek refuge in houses of worship, right? Because they think it's the end of days or Armageddon. And so they want to pray. They want, like, they think that that's going to be their salvation is going to their house of worship and praying to be rescued. If you're, you know, a person that believes that. And so when he first walked in and saw all of those bodies, I thought these were like all people that fled to the church when everything went to hell to, like, you know, try to for some sort of salvation, and that they all died there.
I mean, it could have been, they could have been like part, like some people,
I don't
maybe
really know.
Maybe it was like a let's take something off ourselves, kind of like this is.
Because then I remember it was just a couple initially when Jim first walks in and he's like on an upper level in the church, like the upper walkway, and he's looking down into the like church itself with all of those people, whether they're dead or not. But then there was like you said, just like one person pops up and is like looking straight at him, like, and just like frozen. But like I said, it was like animalistic, like some sort of like predator spotted him. And like that moment I was like, oh, okay, this feels like a horror movie. This feels scary. And then, you know, the appearance of the priest and like how they made him look and how they made him behave was very, very classically zombie. And so I really liked that, and that dynamic of, you know, this is Jim's first encounter with them. And so, you know, it's not in our inherent human nature, like our socialized human nature, to be comfortable immediately killing somebody until it's made clear to us that it is absolutely necessary. And so you have that like very tense few moments where Jim is reluctant and like trying to avoid having to hurt this guy, and then realizing, fortunately in time, that it was absolutely necessary.
Yeah. He's like, keep away from me.
Yeah, like, Father, don't like I don't want to, but don't make me, like, kind of thing. And so that scene, like, that started to feel a little like scarier, and, you know, like, okay, you know, stuff's going to happen, because everything up until that point, like you described, is just, you know, him in the empty city with no people, just kind of wandering around and putting the pieces together of what happened. But then it was the pacing was, you know, very much, there were like stretches that were just very, I don't know, not, I mean, boring isn't a fair word, because obviously it's an artistic choice. It's not like a failure to be entertaining. But
there's
like
character building.
Yeah, it was character building, and it was, you know, lots of times that negative space is meant to intensify the scenes where events are actually happening. But I thought that in terms of like what would make this like a really valuable addition to this canon of viral based horror movies, is because most of the time there's an element in these films where you realize that, you know, human nature is really the worst thing ever in any of these movies.
Yeah.
And so I feel like this one really demonstrated that better than most, showing that the uninfected people at the end were actually the most despicable element of the situation. Like, the infected people had no control over what they were doing, but these soldiers were uninfected and they were still behaving in like an unforgivably disgusting, reprehensible way.
Yeah.
And so You know, and it's also like these movies always give you an opportunity to demonstrate the different ways in which people can respond to mm-hmm. these kinds of situations. And so mm-hmm. you get a Jim, you get a Selena, you get, you know, Frank and Hannah, and like what, you know, how would this affect a parent who's looking out for their child, or a child, you know, who's lost their parent? And then so you see that obviously not everybody responds to the situation in an ugly way.
Yeah.
But then the people that don't end up confronted with people who are responding to the situation in a very yeah. ugly way.
And somehow they're in power.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
are in a powerful position, which is
yeah. which maybe like is kind of like that message that the kind of people that end up in the military are the people with those personality and character traits that would lead them to make these kinds of choices mm-hmm. in this kind of situation. Because like for that whole like end portion of the movie that was so exciting and eventful, there are no zombies. You know, it's, I mean, there are, like, that element is still present, you know, when he, like, releases the infected soldier and he infects the other soldiers. But that whole sequence was really just built around, now, the new villain were these soldiers, mm-hmm. not the infected.
Yeah.
And the infected yeah. ended up helping Jim and Selena and Hannah escape because mm-hmm. they took out the soldiers for them, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting twist. So I would say, like, while... Obviously, the performers, I didn't remember, like I said, I didn't remember anything about the movie, and I certainly didn't remember who was in it. So I was, like, you know, kind of pleased to see that these, you know, really, like, talented, familiar faces in this. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it's my favorite virus horror movie, zombie movie that I've seen. But I did do some, like, kind of interesting different things, I think, that were, like, very thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you think it was scary?
I saw it in the theater, and it scared the crap out of me.
Really?
Yes. This is 2002. I just had graduated high school. It was my first year of college. Mm-hmm. So this was forever ago when I saw this. I remember being just so mesmerized by this concept of, like, not zombies, but infected. Mm-hmm. What do you do when you can't trust the people you're supposed to go to mm-hmm. for help? But, you know, always the who people are, you know, what comes out when they're faced with these kind of challenges has mm-hmm. always fascinated me, which probably explains why I went into what I did for, mm-hmm. you know, when in college and all
teaching
that.
Teaching second
stuff.
Graders?
Teaching first graders. Like, why are you the way that you are?
let's dive into this.
But I loved how fast you can get infected, how it's yeah. instant, how it spreads so easily, how it turns your loved ones into somebody, an animal, a feral animal, basically, who mm-hmm. their only goal is to infect you.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And how a civilization can just be upended and just destroyed by something like this that was basically engineered mm-hmm. in a lab. I thought it was horrifying. And then they are surviving and they're trying to find somebody for help. And then Frank is just killed so recklessly.
Yeah. Just out of the blue.
Yeah, out of the blue. And then I think even if he did survive, he would have been executed anyway. Probably, yeah. you know, because if he would have never allowed anything to okay. hurt his, you know, injure or even touch his daughter, he would be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And they would have killed him.
Yeah.
So it would have happened tragically in that way or the other way, like how he died and or at the hand of the soldiers. But I love this movie mm-hmm. and the dialogue is, you know, and character building and is done so well. And the guy who wrote the screenplay and all the dialogue has gotten a lot of praise and accolades for other films that he's written. And like he did the Civil War movie where mm-hmm. it just came out a few, like last year,
okay.
where America is in a civil war. Mm-hmm. And I haven't actually seen it, but I heard it's very, very good. And it's on my watch list. It has Kirsten Dunst and other people in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think I've seen something
where they're playing like, journalists trying to report on it mm-hmm. and it's like half the country is a certain way and the other half and they're trying to report on what's going on and I think Nick Offerman plays the president. I want to
oh
say
my God.
So but there I did watch of course 28 Weeks Later, which mm-hmm. was kind of a letdown
how
when it came
much
out in the theater
like how far after the first one was it made?
I want to say the following year, but I could be mistaken. Okay. It has Jeremy Renner, Idris Elba, Rose Byrne, all these, I think Byrne or Byrne, Rose Byrne. Yeah. And the guy from The Full Monty, and he was also in Trainspotting as well.
Okay.
But it was kind of a letdown. Mm-hmm. Basically, did you ever watch it?
No, and I'm, so with this one, with 28 Days Later, is that supposed to be accurate that England was the only part of the world infected?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. At this point, in 28 weeks later, they're trying to repatriate people who were displaced because of the pandemic.
Okay.
And they're only have cleared out the Isle of Dogs at this point. So they're there. The military, the Americans are there. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy Renner is one of them. Okay. And so they're trying to bring people back. And the first scene in that movie is horrifying. And so I recommend at least watching that part. You can watch it on YouTube. It's horrifying. And it has this man and his wife and a bunch of other, like, Scrabble survivors kind mm-hmm. of just, like, living in a country house, and they're fine. And then they're not. Mm-hmm. And it's awful. But he has, they're like, they mentioned their kids that they happen to be on holiday in Spain mm-hmm. during for, like, a little summer trip from their school mm-hmm. when the epidemic happened. Mm-hmm. And so it's the dad at this point, and he's like, Mom died. And so the kids come back, and they're the youngest people in the country, like 14 and 11. Uh-huh. So they come back. And of course, like kids, they want to go back to their house. So they're basically been told you can't go back mm-hmm. into the city because it hasn't been cleaned. It's like still, it's not safe, they're yeah. still infected the corpses because it's a virus. Mm-hmm. But they managed to go back to their house, and their mother was left to die by their father.
Right.
But she's there. Ugh. And she's alive, actually.
Mm-hmm. And she's not infected?
She's not symptomatic.
Oh, okay.
So then hilarity ensues as it does, and there's
is
a reinfection
again. Is that the only time
that
happens in the movies, where in these movies where they're infected but not behaving
movie,
like that?
Yes, because of some kind of genetic thing that she has.
Okay.
So these safe population that they had is not safe, and then they are basically like terminate everybody because mm-hmm. things have gotten out of hand. The American military they're like, this isn't, you know, this is bad. And the two kids manage to get out, and they go to France, I think, and then the last scene is people running in France, and there's the Eiffel Tower, and they're all infected.
Yeah.
So that happened. But in they're doing a movie, there's going to be a follow-up 28 years later.
It's supposed to come out next year, right?
Yes. And yeah. Danny Boyle, and they a lot of heavy hitters are coming back to make the movie. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Tom said he read something where it's like it's being filmed entirely on iPhones. Or it was filmed entirely on iPhones.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the movie 28 Days Later was filmed digitally mm-hmm. because of money. So that's why a lot of that's kind of the idea of why it's not available for streaming or DVD.
Okay.
Because maybe they're trying to do a big release or fix it. I'm not really sure how that works. But if you try to find the DVD online,
it's not possible.
Hundreds of dollars on eBay.
Yeah, you have to go on eBay or something because mm-hmm. they're not producing them.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But there's also comics of what happened too. So if it had it follows Selena, and it also follows another scientist as they were developing this mm-hmm. virus, and it's very related to the Ebola virus.
Okay.
And that's what it was derived off of, and then so hence the red eyes and the vomiting blood.
Yeah.
And then at this point we see Selena, and she's in a camp where they have people who are refugees.
Okay.
And it's like journalists, and they're like, we want to go back to the UK so we can figure out what happened. She's like, you cannot go back there.
Yeah.
But Jim's nowhere to be found. He's gone. Mm-hmm. So then you find out that there's a tribunal after they were picked up by Finnish soldiers. Mm-hmm. That was like basically what you did at that
mansion.
At that mansion was, you know, murder. Mm-hmm. So he was executed by firing squad because of his actions.
Yeah.
So Selena's super jaded.
Yeah,
long story short, as one would be. But Hannah was apparently adopted by a family in Germany and is off living her life.
Living her best life.
Selena, of course, can't quit it. So she goes back with these journalists.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, you know, this category of films, you know, this virus approach is like one of those where it kind of walks the line between horror and science fiction. But I do think it's interesting that, like, if you go back to, you know, the origin of this whole concept of film, like Night of the Living Dead, you know, the source of the infection in Night of the Living Dead was like a meteor.
Yeah.
Right. But
like germs on a meteor or something.
Meteor germs. Space germs.
Don't you hate space germs?
I hate space germs.
They make me crazed.
But like since then, it feels like, and now categorically, like across the board, it seems like it's always a man-made. It's always man-made, whatever the virus or infection is. You know, because when we talked about crazies last time, or a couple times ago, that they, you know, it was the town got infected because the military plane crashed and it was, you know, carrying whatever weapon they were trying to develop. And then this one, it was the testing on monkeys that produced, you know, something that they did intentionally. And then, you know, I'm thinking about the, you know, the other movies that were, you know, considering talking about or planning to talk about. And just they don't occur organically in these movies. And so it's almost like every time there's an inherent condemnation of humanity. That like we're hell bent on destroying ourselves.
Yeah, and their end goal is always to destabilize a civilization.
Right. It's always like, you know, about the struggle for power, the competition, the being able to harm, you know, anybody, any opposition, whether it's another country or another population. But it's coming from those like those base urges of humankind. And then as we've developed and discovered more things and developed the technology and the skills and to do these things. And then we always manage to undo ourselves in that way.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of in the comics, the doctors or scientists who are working at Manchester in that facility, one of them didn't agree with what they were doing and was like very upset. And they were like, I think kind of partners in their research. So, but he eventually was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And he left. And then he contacted that group to be like, you need to like get this out in the open. You need to let everyone know what they're trying to do. So then they tried to go do that and release the monkeys or whatever, take photos and all that stuff to kind of like put them on blast, and then ended up creating a worldwide pandemic.
Which is like, okay. I mean, I was kind of annoyed with that girl because even if it was a perfectly healthy chimpanzee, if you were open the cage and release it. Have
you ever seen Nope?
I mean, it's going to attack you. So even if the guy was completely lying about it being infected and there was no harm, like risk of that at all, freeing a chimpanzee, a perfectly healthy chimpanzee from a cage that it's been held in, you're going to get attacked.
We've all seen that Oprah where that woman had her face eaten by a chimpanzee.
I mean, come on.
Maybe you haven't, but I have.
I have not, but I know what happened to Siegfried. Or was it Roy? I don't know. But that's the thing.
Wasn't that a tiger?
Yeah. But that's the point, is that, like, you know, they if you want to give them more credit than they deserve, if they're so focused on protecting animals from these humans that are absolutely doing something heinous and unacceptable that I don't personally agree with. Don't be stupid.
Well, she was a dummy.
She was a total dummy. I mean, maybe she had seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back too many times where they let the orangutan out and he just becomes their best buddy and like gives them little orangutan kisses. But like anybody should have known that a perfectly healthy chimp in that circumstance is going to attack you.
It's also incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, best case scenario, you're still probably going to die. Maybe it won't start a pandemic that wipes out the entire country, but you're going to die because you just let out a wild animal that's been abused and held in a cage.
Yeah.
So I was kind of annoyed with her on multiple levels.
We're like, bam, you have Ebola fear.
Or
fear.
Ma'am, not ma'am, fear, please.
Ebola rage.
Ebola rage.
Yeah, I don't know. I could talk on and on. I'm excited for the new movie, and I will be seeing that, of course.
So would you say, so somebody who, you know, obviously has not enjoyed the first one as much as you have over the years, if I were to be interested in watching the new one coming out, should you watch 28 Weeks Later before watching it? Do you need, like, would you think that that would be...
I mean, you could always watch a recap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. You know, it's not... I just think that a lot of the character building... But you thought it was kind of boring in the first one. But, you know, it kind of tells the story.
Yeah.
So you might want to check it out. So, and I think it's, like, not a huge time suck. Turn it on while you're folding clothes, honestly.
You know,
it's not something that you have to super pay attention to, except for the first scene, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. That was really good.
Yeah. Well,
but
and I think
the acting caliber is good because they have a lot of really
great
good
performers.
Great performers.
Yeah.
But there's some things that annoy me, like shaky cam, stuff like that, like different views, viewpoints of the
cinematography.
Yeah, that annoys me. But
yeah, and I think I mean to like I say, it's not fair to call this first one boring. Because obviously he was making very thoughtful, deliberate choices on how he wanted the movie to be paced and how he was using that time that was not like action packed. And I think that goes to show that like, even just within this micro genre of like horror, sci-fi, and then, you know, distilling it even further to like horror / sci-fi based on viral infections, you know, that there's still
and
a spectrum
being fucked up.
Yeah. Like a spectrum of, how those films land or how they read. Because like discussing Resident Evil, like that's an action movie, right? More than a horror movie, really. And then The Crazies was like, I don't know, maybe more in the middle between, I wouldn't have called it an action movie, but there were elements of that that felt a little more horror to me than either 28 Days Later or Resident Evil. But,
well, there were like the infected were some of them were creepy.
Yeah.
In The Crazies.
Yeah. And they seemed, like, nah, they nah, seemed nah, evil.
Like, oh.
You know, they weren't just like out of control or they weren't like, cause sometimes zombies are like, they're mindless, right?
Yeah.
And then in 28 Days Later, they were like animals, so they weren't mindless, but they were like driven to harm.
Yeah.
And so, but you're right. In The Crazies, they were kind of like creepy and almost like wanting to be creepy or wanting to be evil or upsetting.
Yeah.
So that had a different feel as well. And so like. Then you might say that the 28 Days Later falls into the end of the spectrum of being a more dramatic take on it.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't, because it certainly wasn't an action movie, but the scary or elements of it didn't always feel horror movie scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously there's the sci-fi context of like viral weaponry or viral testing. But yeah, so it was like kind of, it was a blend of a lot of those different like approaches to the like the topic or the genre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was very dramatic.
Yeah. And then Cillian Murphy also is an amazing actor.
Yeah.
He was very not known at the time,
yeah.
Really.
You do connect with him very deeply, mm-hmm. His character.
Yeah. And then you feel for him and mm-hmm. You just want him to be kind of okay.
Yeah.
And then Selena is like a badass and you're mm-hmm. Like, well, obviously I'm rooting for her. She's great.
Yeah.
And then
you see like her exterior starting to crack a little bit and then you're like, oh my God, they are going to fall in love. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Cillian Murphy went on to be Oppenheimer and win Oscars. Like and then he was in Peaky Blinders. He's a powerhouse.
I loved him. Scarecrow in the Batman.
Yeah. He was
movies.
Great in that too.
Like, yeah.
So I'm glad that he went on to make stuff and he always had said, I'm on board 100% to do another movie with
Danny Boyle.
Because he's like, this is like it was my break and I love Danny Boyle and who couldn't mm-hmm. love them. So I think it'll be good. We'll see.
I'm sure you'll report on it when eventually watch it. Yeah.
Yes. So what movie are we doing next?
Oh, yeah. Where you got very mixed up. Oh, yes.
I got distracted.
Yeah. We're doing Bird Box next.
Yes.
From 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Netflix film, like a Netflix produced film. And so I think it should still be available on Netflix.
I want to say yeah.
Yeah. Starring Sandy Bullock.
Everybody's
favorite mom, Sandy Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that thinking about that and like when, you know, trying to remember how long ago it came out and everything kind of made me made another thought occur to me that in terms of the films that we're going to discuss, we might have to do a little research because all of these films we talked about so far came out before COVID.
Yeah.
Where obviously we have a completely different perspective on pandemics and viral infections post-COVID, just as a global society.
Yeah.
And there was, I remember there being one like really, really low budge horror movie called Quarantine that was actually set during COVID. And it was like a bunch of like 20 somethings were like going out to quarantine at one of their like rich, like, houses out in the country or whatever. So like kind of bodies type setting. And then like someone showing up, like, I don't really remember a lot about it cause it was pretty garbo. But I mean, it was a perfectly serviceable, low budge, scary movie. But that's the only one that comes to mind that reflects like an awareness of COVID or like integrating any of those experiences in how we would look at stories like this.
Yeah.
Because all of this has always been about how a virus might occur, how it would spread, and then how the survivors would respond.
Right.
Yeah. And so our perception of all of those things could very easily shift after actually experiencing a global pandemic, even though it wasn't a pandemic that caused people to start eating each other. But people started behaving in some really ugly, selfish ways
100%.
During COVID. And the way that it played out in politics, like there was some ugliness there as well. And so that, thinking about Bird Box being like, oh, it's not that old, but then remembering it did still come out before COVID. You know, trying to look around and see what kind of films have been made that have incorporated maybe like a changing mindset or a changing attitude post-COVID.
Sure. Because pre-COVID, it was all sort of like, oh, what if this happened when that... This would never happen.
This would never happen. But oh my gosh, if it did, it'd be a horror movie.
But then we're like, oh shit, it's happening.
No, it turned out it was all about toilet paper. That was it was entirely about toilet paper.
Let's pour some hand sanitizer.
And face masks. Like, that's it.
I never felt so much vindication than when we went in lockdown and I had already had stuff on Subscribe and Save that was hand sanitizers and wipes and Lysol. And I was like, see?
Winning.
I was ready for this.
Totally ready.
Before any of us had to come home and have a shutdown and live with each other. People kind of acted nuts.
Yeah, and it was so bizarre. I never understood why we fixated on toilet paper. Like, of all the things to run out of, I'm least worried about toilet paper. Like, food?
No.
Medicine?
You can eat the paper.
Like, what?
You can make it into a
mush.
There's
so many things more crucial to not just surviving but being comfortable than toilet paper.
It was odd.
I mean, like, we had, you know, and maybe it's because we live in California. There's a lot of hippies around here. We very crunchy family. I'm not going to name names, but they used what is deemed family cloth, where it's actually, they laundered fabric that they used as toilet paper. So kind of like, you know, doing cloth diapers, which I did cloth diaper my kids. We didn't use disposable diapers, but they like cloth toilet paper in their house. Well, they used to. They probably don't anymore.
For number ones.
Yeah. Well, number one, too. But now then they moved to Tennessee. So I'm sure they use toilet paper now.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think they stand for that kind of stuff in the South.
Resources. I just burn stuff on the front in the backyard.
Yeah, just for fun. Toilet paper. It's fun to watch toilet paper go up in a blaze of glory. But anyway, I always thought that was funny that was the thing people panicked about running out of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
it was weird.
Canned goods would have made sense.
No. Toilet paper? Yeah, and diapers. People like hoarded diapers too. It was crazy. Crazy times.
Which is like things that are actually A, fairly easy to substitute for, and B, you won't die if you don't have enough. It's not fatal. Yeah. There's not like a fatal level of toilet paper that you can have. Like, our toilet paper supply is so low we died.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird choice. I don't know. We need to look up movies about like infection or apocalypse stuff after COVID happened and see what's out there. If there is anything, because people maybe moved on away from that.
Or it's something that they didn't want to touch, or maybe because it really wasn't as thrilling as we seemed to think it would be when we were making all these movies before COVID.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't exciting. You know, you didn't run around in gas masks throwing Molotov cocktails. Like, I mean, maybe some people wanted to. But, you know, it was kind of embarrassing the way that a lot of people responded. And it was obviously devastating for frontline healthcare workers and families who, you know, were infected very early on before we really understood understood what was happening. Like, there were people for whom it was a devastating time.
Life-altering.
Yeah, but for the majority of people, we were just, like, complaining about the inconvenience about it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, who wants to make a movie of that?
Selfish, entitled jerks.
Yeah, pieces of crap.
I can't go to dinner.
Oh, it's my birthday and I have to stay home.
Oh, you poor little baby. How old are you? 42? Oh, you're 42 and you're going to be a big baby about this.
Yeah, your 42nd birthday is really a milestone that needs to be celebrated at Dave and Buster's.
I know, right? Oh, so we got to figure out how selfish people can be. But, you know, I always find that entertaining, seeing how people can be their worst selves.
Yeah. And, like our soldier friends in 28 Days Later. It brings out the best in some people and the worst in others.
It all comes full circle.
It certainly does. We brought it right back to the film.
Back to the film, which is what we met. Wink, wink, wink.
Wink. We planned the whole thing.
Okay. So, watch Bird Box.
From 2018. Should be on Netflix.
It's also a book, but I haven't read the book. I heard the book is very good. But
anyway.
Maybe I'll cue it up after I finish the Incidents Around the House book. With the haunted house. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And then, I mean, you can lend it to me and we just won't tell the library.
okay. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.